Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
New EPA emissions rules put the squeeze on coal power plants. Plus a mega deal in mining as BHP offers to buy rival Anglo-American.
What we see through this deal is that this is very much a bet on the energy transition. So it's definitely a broad-based scramble to own copper ahead of rising demand.
And 18 of Donald Trump's allies are indicted in Arizona on charges they tried to overturn the 2020 election. It's Thursday, April 25th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We begin in Arizona, where a state grand jury has indicted 18 of former President Donald Trump's allies, including his former lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, and former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, over their alleged efforts to overturn Trump's 2020 election defeat in the state. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays explained the charges in footage released by her office, saying the people of Arizona had elected President Biden in a free and fair vote.
Unwilling to accept this fact, the defendants charged by the state grand jury allegedly schemed to prevent the lawful transfer of the presidency. Whatever their reasoning was, the plot to violate the law must be answered for, and I was elected to uphold the law of this state.
Representatives for Giuliani and Meadows declined to comment. The Arizona charges come after similar indictments in Nevada, Georgia, and Michigan. And they also come ahead of a Supreme Court hearing today on Donald Trump's last-ditch bid to avoid trial on charges that he attempted to steal the 2020 election. Trump denies wrongdoing of any kind, but even if he did break the law, has claimed that the Constitution forbids prosecuting former presidents for crimes they allegedly committed while in office. Fertility rates in the U.S. have fallen to a record low of just 1.62 births per woman in 2023, a 2% decline from a year earlier, and the lowest rate recorded since government tracking began in the 1930s. Health and Science reporter Jennifer Kalfas says greater access to contraception, more women establishing fulfilling careers, and a range of economic stressors are at play.
Both young women and men are uncertain about their futures, and especially their financial futures. They're spending a lot of money on their student loans, home ownership is more expensive, and childcare in the U.S. is quite expensive as well. So they're kind of weighing all of these different factors in making decisions about when or how to have kids.
That said, the report's author says an influx of people immigrating to the U.S. could offset the impact of lower birth rates, easing labor shortages, and expanding the population of big metropolitan areas. And the Biden administration has issued sweeping new rules to crack down on pollution from power plants, measures that could force many coal plants to make costly technology upgrades or to close. Journal climate reporter Ed Ballard told me that the rules come as the U.S. is seeing the first upswing in power demand in two decades.
The Biden administration is trying to thread the needle here. It's trying to go green and cut emissions while also, you know, maintain the stability of the grid and keep the lights on at a time when there's an awful lot of new power demand coming online. I think the main implication of these rules is that they will bring forward the retirement of the remaining coal plants on America's power grid. And that's because they will have to install carbon capture technology in order to comply with the rules. And that technology hasn't been used at many power plants, and it will impose a big cost. And in practice, it probably won't happen. And for that reason, the utilities that own those power plants are going to push back against these rules.
Newly built natural gas plants will also be subject to the rules, though existing gas plants, the backbone of America's power supply, are exempt. The rules are expected to be challenged in court. Coming up, we'll look at the growing importance of copper as a potential mega deal in the mining industry takes shape, plus a massive earnings day for aviation. Those stories and more after the break.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.
Now to a potential mega deal in the mining industry, as Australian behemoth BHP Group has offered to buy longtime rival Anglo American for $39 billion. Anglo's shares have jumped in London trading this morning after the company said it was reviewing BHP's all-share offer. David Winning is our bureau chief for Australia and New Zealand and has been covering this developing story. David, you write that this deal could reshape the global mining industry. How so? Lay out the significance of this for us.
Well, I think it's worth making clear that the big miners operate very big mines. And so they're not chasing small assets. And so that concentrates production in fewer hands. And so what we see through this deal is that this is very much a bet on the energy transition. Yes, it comes with iron ore, and BHP is a major player in the iron ore market. It's the third largest behind Rio Tinto and Vale in Brazil. But 30% of Anglo American's production is copper. BHP already has a majority stake in the world's biggest copper mine. That's called Escondida down in Chile. So you're bringing these two large companies together, but already have substantial positions in a commodity that's going to play a big role in the energy transition. We see copper used in electric vehicles. We see it in wind turbines. It's also got consumer uses, things like smartphones, air conditioners. And so, you know, it's very much what we call a future-facing commodity in that it's going to be in large demand from here.
And that demand seems to be partly responsible for what has really been a flurry of mining deals lately, right?
Absolutely. What we've seen and have written about is gold miners who long produced copper alongside gold and saw it as what they called a byproduct, are now doing deals that specifically give them more access to copper. And that's a new trend over the last sort of 18 months to 2 years. It was part of the rationale for Newmont buying Australia's Newcrest Mining, which at the time was the world's biggest deal in the gold sector. So it's definitely a broad-based scramble to own copper ahead of rising demand, but it's also a reflection of the fact that supply is constrained. We've seen a lot of miners reduce their production forecasts in recent months because of issues such as ground conditions at their mines. And there's not a lot of big copper deposits out there that haven't already been developed.
David, given that you earlier described this deal as potentially concentrating production in fewer hands, how likely is it that this deal actually comes to fruition?
The major obstacle here is whether it gets approved by investors. Obviously, we haven't reached that point. It's not been a binding bid that Anglo American has signaled it could recommend. It's very early days. And investors will be aware that Anglo American has prized assets and copper, and that its share price is down about 47% since it had a peak in April 2022. So one of the early responses that we've seen so far is that it's opportunistic. And so investors that have been holding the stock for quite a while will be looking at that share price decline and realize that there's inherent value there and probably would hold out for more money. Obviously, it being an all-stock deal, they'd be getting stock in BHP, and so that there is an incentive there to be part of a bigger company.
That was The Wall Street Journal's David Winning. David, thanks so much for the update.
Thanks indeed.
Meanwhile, we have also learned this morning that Anglo American is considering the sale of its De Beers Diamond unit and has held conversations with potential buyers, including luxury houses and Gulf sovereign wealth funds. The discussions are said to be at an early stage, and a valuation hasn't been discussed. Two of the world's biggest consumer companies have reported conflicting outlooks on the state of spending this morning. Unilever expects sales to grow between 3 and 5% this year as consumers with more disposable income return to top brands like Dove, resulting in better-than-expected turnover for the first quarter. That said, Nestle's first quarter sales and volume both missed forecasts as American consumers cut back on snacks like Kit Kat chocolate bars amid a sharp rise in prices. Though the company also said its premium brands were benefiting from economic growth in the U.S., which was boosting people's disposable incomes. Meanwhile, it is a massive earnings day for aviation as we await reports from Airbus, American Airlines, and Southwest. Strong travel demand across the sector has been tempered by production problems at Boeing, which yesterday reported an 8% drop in annual revenue and said that it's building fewer of its 737 MAX jets as the plane maker weeds out quality problems. Today, all eyes will be on Southwest Airlines, with the Dallas-based carrier's results likely to be dominated by its reliance on Boeing. Those earnings come after United Airlines last week reported better-than-expected results, but also said that it plans to lease nearly three dozen Airbus planes in the coming years to make up for a $200 million earnings hit from the three-week grounding of the MAX 9. That is likely to be a boon for plane maker Airbus, which reports its first quarter results after the European market close. And for those fearful of flying, endless headlines about Boeing's production issues probably haven't helped. And in fact, every third American now has a fear of flying, according to travel company Upgraded Points. Reporter Matthew Kronsberg has been writing about some of the techniques that can help anxious flyers to get more comfortable taking to the skies, and he found that so-called exposure therapy can be incredibly helpful.
I spoke to Michael Shear, a professor of psychology at Hofstra University and founder of their phobia and trauma clinic. He has been treating people for fear of flying for years, and he has said it can start with something as simple for the profoundly afraid as just driving by an airport, watching airplanes. Another form of exposure therapy is VR, using virtual reality. There is a company called Overcome that has an entire online module for going through all of the aspects of flying, and it includes breathing and psychological exercises, much the way that Duolingo handles it with language learning, in that you do it for just a few minutes a day and build up an ability to handle that kind of scary situation.
And if you're eager to give exposure therapy a shot, Matthew writes that Kansas City International Airport has built out a travel experience room using the fuselage of a plane where you can see what it's like to put your luggage in an overhead compartment, buckle up, and push back from the gate so you'll be ready for your next flight. And that is What's News for Thursday morning. Today's show was produced by Daniel Bach and Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff, and I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. And until then, thanks for listening.